Welcome back to the Wealth Studying Podcast. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm the founder and money manager at InvestableWealth.com. Here at the Wealth Studying Podcast, we're all about helping you attain personal freedom. Now, wealth studying is a spinoff of the old-fashioned homesteading. If you remember the pioneers that take over a small piece of property, maybe a few acres, and they'd try and sustain their family off of the crops and the animals that they could produce on that land. Well, today in the 21st century, we attain personal freedom and liberty by wealth studying. That's where we build, preserve, and grow our wealth. Remember, wealth is all about freedom. We're coming to the end of our 10-part series. Today's episode will cover the ninth wealth building principle, which is be a giver. Now, our world is made up of makers and takers, but to be truly financially independent and to have real happiness, you have to be a giver, someone that produces more than they consume. And that's in all aspects of your life, your business and income earning areas of your life, as well as your personal life. Now, it's just plain common sense that to become wealthy, you have to produce and save more than you consume. If you don't, you'll be broke. You'll be a slave to debt. You'll be running up credit card and consumer debt, and you'll spend all your life living paycheck to paycheck. So obviously, if you want financial capital, if you want financial wealth, you have to find a way to earn a substantial income and then be a diligent saver. Now, the same can be true when it comes to the character, the non-financial behavior that we experience. Now, this is more nuanced. It's harder to quantify than the financial side. To be truly happy, you have to build social capital in your personal life. Social capital is a source of healthy relationships. And as I say, it's hard to quantify, but you have to be a giver, not a taker, when it comes to your personal character and your personal relationships. And that's what builds happy marriages, happy homes. That's how people develop happy memberships in clubs or organizations. Social capital is every bit as important as monetary or financial capital. So in this podcast, we're going to discuss giving in terms of both financial or monetary capital. That would be you as an employee or you as an entrepreneur. And then also in terms of your social capital. That's your character. That's charitable, philanthropic giving. We're going to look at both of those. Let's start out on the career side. Now, as we've talked about in previous episodes, production is the source of wealth. Wealth doesn't come from a paycheck. It doesn't come from the government. It doesn't come by winning a lottery. Wealth only comes when you produce. And that's either as an entrepreneur that has your own company or as an employee that works for somebody else. You have to add value. You have to create products and services that customers want and that they're willing to spend money on. The customer is the ultimate boss. Now, I know many listeners to this podcast are employees, so let's focus on that side of it for a bit. As an employee, you have to give. You have to be a giver. You have to produce more than you're paid. Now, remember, your compensation isn't just your paycheck. Your employer has many expenses besides what you just see in your take-home pay. He has to pay you. He has to pay payroll taxes. He has to pay your benefits. There's other fees involved, like workman's compensation. He has to provide you with a workspace, maybe tools. He has to invest capital to create the business to employ you to begin with. So there's a lot more that goes into your compensation other than just that take-home pay that you receive. And you have to ensure that your employer is getting a return well above what he's paying you with all those extra costs. You have to produce a profit for him. It's not that he's greedy. It's not that he's mean or cruel or that he's trying to take advantage of you. Why would he possibly employ you if there wasn't some incentive for him? He's not going to do this out of the goodness of his heart, and neither would you. So if you want to have a successful career as an employee, determine what your true compensation is, and then make sure that you're always providing your employer with more than that. You have to be a giver. Now let's think about what that may mean. Let's look at a couple examples. Let's start at the lowest level. Let's look at the quintessential fast food worker, right? The burger flipper. We hear about how horrible and what low pay these jobs are, but let's just use that as our starting point. Maybe as a teenager or a young adult, you're employed as a fast food worker. Actually, in this economy, with so many people being laid off, particularly those in middle age, they can't get back into the workforce, working in a fast food restaurant may be their only avenue back to employment. So let's consider that for a moment. You start off as an employee in one of these places. They pay you minimum wage, not because they're cruel or greedy. They pay you minimum wage because that's all you're producing for the company. The skill level that you're providing, the service that you're providing in that restaurant, is only providing the employer with a slim margin. So he can't afford to pay you more. In a minimum wage role, you're going to be starting out maybe working in the restaurant, cleaning up, going out, picking up trash, bringing food out to customers. But remember, you have to be a giver. You always have to be producing more. If you want to excel, you have to be producing at one or two or maybe three levels above where you're at. That's how you can ensure that you're going to stay employed and that you're going to have a successful and prosperous career, even when you're starting out at the bottom. So you start out in this restaurant, you're just the cleanup person. You show up on time, you show up clean, you're neat, you're respectful, you provide good customer service, and that gets you promoted maybe to working at the counter. Now you're a front-facing person. Again, you show that you're diligent, you provide great customer service, you're trustworthy, so you start handling money. You show up consistently to work, you're always on time, you're willing to work late, you're willing to work extra hours. You're showing your employer that you're a giver, you're not a taker. You'll eventually be able to work your way up to whatever the next level is, maybe a team leader where you start learning all the aspects of the restaurant, the operations in the kitchen as well as the front end of the restaurant. By doing these things, you're better than most employees there. You're better than most of the minimum wage or slightly better than minimum wage employees. There will be opportunities for you. Because you're a giver, because you're working always at a level one or two above where you're being paid, you're going to move up. You'll be promoted maybe to an assistant manager, then on to being a manager, a regional manager. You can keep working your way all the way up to be an owner. Don't tell me this doesn't happen. I know it happens. I know people that started out as burger flippers that today are either managers or owners of large operations and restaurants. And I'm not talking fancy restaurants, just regular fast food restaurants. And I promise you, I've seen what they make. They're making $150,000 to $200,000 a year. This didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in 3 or 4 years. They put in their 10,000 hours. They worked at each of these levels, starting from the ground floor and working their way up. And now they're highly compensated. Yeah, they're in their 40s or 50s. They're building wealth for themselves and their family. They're building financial independence. They did this because they started out as a giver, and even today they're a giver. They're giving more to the customers that come in there and spend their money. They're providing those customers with the value that they want in the fast food restaurant. Otherwise, the customers wouldn't come there. They'd go someplace else. They'd go to a restaurant that was cleaner or had faster service or had better food. So they're providing customers with the experience that they want by giving them a higher level of value than what that customer's paying. The customer is happy to come in and make that exchange, to spend a dollar or two on the value menu or to spend $5 or $6 or $10 or $15 or $20 for the entree meals. The customers see the value. I know you're saying, hey, that can't happen to everybody. There are going to be managers that just won't promote you. There are going to be owners that just don't want to pay you what you're worth. And you know what? You're absolutely right. And you know what? Those managers or those owners, they're not performing at or above their next level. They're seeing things in a very self-serving or scarcity mentality. They're not looking at ahead. And if you're an employee and you're working for somebody like that, you know what you do? You quit. You go out and you find a better job. I promise you, if you live in the United States and you're a hard worker and you're willing to work at two or three levels above where you're currently being paid, you'll always find a job. If you're able-bodied, you're healthy, you have a sound mind, and you're willing to produce, there's someone willing to hire you. And the reason is because, remember we talked about your compensation? If you're working at one or two or three levels above where they're paying you, they're getting a firm profit back. They're getting a nice margin. It's profitable to them, and they will hire you. They just want to make money. They want to make a profit. If you can prove that you'll consistently work at that level and produce for them, they will hire you. It may take some time. You may have to prove yourself, right? There's no free lunch, but it will happen. I know too many people that are in their 40s and 50s and are successful today because they started out at the bottom 30, 40 years ago. Now, let's still look at an employee example, but let's look at another one that's not so low level as a burger flipper. Let's look at somebody that has a degree. Maybe they went to college. They studied business, accounting, finance, something like that. Maybe they're working for a mid-sized company or a large corporation. They start out in the accounting department. You know, this is the low end of the food chain for that type of profession. If all they do is do their job, work with some spreadsheets, count some numbers, go home every day, they're going to stay in that job for the rest of their life. They're never going to excel. The way they get ahead is, just like the burger flipper, they have to be thinking one or two or three levels above where they're at now. So they start out in the accounting department. Again, they show themselves reliable, trustworthy. They come in on time. They stay late. They work themselves into, say, the auditing department. They go above and beyond there. Then they get promoted and they can work as a business analyst where they can show that they're just not competent crunching the numbers, but they can also provide insight. They can show their creativity, that they can not only look at the numbers, but they can crunch them and analyze them and help their company make more money, help their company produce for the bottom line. That's what they do in the business analyst side of things. From there, they go on to support the sales team or the executive staff, again, helping with the bottom line, showing that they can not only crunch numbers, but they can apply those in real-world situations where they can keep making the company more and more money. Just like the employee in the fast food restaurant, they have to produce more than they're compensated. They have to produce a marginable profit for their employer, otherwise they wouldn't employ them. So they continue working their way up. Maybe they start working on mergers and acquisitions. Again, they show their talent, they show their ability to have a good business sense, their ability to be able to see the bottom line. They get promoted to be a general manager or vice president. Now again, this isn't going to happen overnight. You've got to put in your 10,000 hours. But someone can start out in the accounting department, and over 15, 20 years, they can work their way up, they can be a general manager, they can be a vice president, they can be making $200,000, $300,000. Again, don't tell me it doesn't happen. I've seen it. I've seen it happen over and over again. If you're willing to work, if you're willing to put in the hours, if you're willing to produce, if you can be the giver, you'll be compensated. And I understand you're saying, but hey, some employees, they'll block you. People will be jealous. They'll put roadblocks in your way where you can't get ahead, or your boss will feel threatened and he will do whatever he can to see that you don't get promoted. Well, all that's probably true. But you know what? When that happens, you have to go find another job. Now, if you're performing at a high level, and you're working for a company that after 2 or 3 years, they haven't promoted you, they haven't given you additional money, they haven't given you more incentive, they haven't provided you with more leadership opportunities or pathways to grow in the company, then you need to leave that company. Don't ever spend more than 2 or 3 years someplace where you're not growing. Get out and find someone that will promote you, someone that will pay you what you're worth. Don't ever be afraid to quit if it means you can better yourself somewhere else. Now, up till now, we've been talking about how things work for employees, but they're the same way for an entrepreneur. The entrepreneur is just an employee that's willing to accept more risk and responsibility and pay himself rather than working for someone. And the entrepreneur, just like everybody, he has a boss. His boss is the customer. If he doesn't satisfy the customer goes somewhere else. They fire him. So the customer is not only the entrepreneur's boss, but really it's everybody's boss. And that entrepreneur always has to be satisfying the customer at 1 or 2 or 3 levels above what they're paying him. You can't just go out and create a better mousetrap and think the world's going to beat a path to your door. You need to prove your concepts. You need to prove your products. You need to market them. You need to solicit your customers. You need to let them know that the value that your products or services are providing to the customer are well and above the few dollars that they're paying for them. Don't expect it to be easy. You need to go out and explain those features and benefits to people. Customers may not understand it right away. You're going to have competitors that talk bad about you, that try and discourage customers from using your products. You have to go out and sell it. But again, I promise you, if you're a giver, if you're giving at 1 or 2 or 3 levels of value more than you're being paid, eventually customers will recognize that value, and then they will beat that path to your door. Customers are always happy to part with their money if they think they're getting value in exchange for it. I frequently talk about Steve Jobs. Apple is a company that provides value, and I've always been happy to part with my money in order to get their products and services. Think about what Steve Jobs and Apple have done in the areas of computing, of telecommunications, of music, not only listening to music, but the distribution of it. Right now, I'm communicating to you through a podcast. Most likely, you downloaded that from the iTunes store. We couldn't be having this conversation right now if it wasn't for Steve Jobs and the company he created at Apple. So myself and millions of other people are happy to part with our hard-earned money to give it to Apple so that we can get those products and services. On the entrepreneurial level, Steve Jobs is a genius. If you know his history, you know he's someone that dropped out of college. He started out at a low level. He worked his way up to build Apple, then he got fired from Apple, and then he came back and resurrected the company. He is a quintessential entrepreneur, and he's a perfect example when we talk about building financial capital. But I want to talk on the other side of things. I want to talk about social capital now. You know, from what I've read about Steve Jobs, he was lacking in the social capital area. If the stories about him are true, he probably teeters on the sociopath scale of things. He could be a very mean and cruel person. And I'm not talking about any competitive nature. You would expect that from him. If he wants to go head-to-head with the guys at Google or the guys at Microsoft, you know, if he wants to take on Bill Gates, that's one thing. That's at his level. But when you read about Steve Jobs' personal interactions, the way he treated people below him, employees, staff, restaurant workers, just common people, he treated them mean. He treated them like dirt in many cases. He went out of his way not only just to be condescending and rude, but actually to be mean. Again, I only know what I read about him. Now, if these things are true, then my assessment of him would be that although he had substantial monetary wealth, he was bankrupt when it came to social capital. And for him to act that way, he must have been a very insecure individual. He he must have been very, very unhappy. Like so many people, despite all of his success, all of his money and wealth, inside he must have been a very lonely and unhappy man. He lacked social capital. And that's what I want to talk about next. Let's talk about social capital. Because to be happy, to be truly wealthy and independent, you have to have social capital. You have to have good character. No man is an island. We live in communities, in neighborhoods, in families. We have to be a giver there as well. Just like an entrepreneur that offers products and services at a high value, we have to offer love and social interactions and charity and philanthropy at a high level. We have to be giving at one or two levels above what we're receiving. And these are in all the personal aspects of our lives, in our families, in our friendships, in our neighborhoods and communities. And we reach that highest level when we're actually interacting and giving to the strangers, to the people we don't even know. That's when we're giving at the third and the fourth level. Now, when we give to build social capital, it may not just be money. Money's the easiest thing to measure, so maybe you give 10% of your income, maybe you give 5% of your income. But it's just as important to give the time. America is an amazing place. Look at all the clubs and groups and organizations that just run on volunteering. It's all done by volunteers, people that contribute their time and their resources and their talents to help others. Again, to help people in their community, to help their friends, in many cases just to help strangers, people they don't even know. These are at all levels. These could be food banks or some type of community groups. This could be helping out with the Boy Scouts. It might be helping at an animal shelter. Americans are wonderful people. They're very generous. Look at our clubs and our organizations and our churches and you'll see that. And it's all done by people of high character that are very philanthropic and they're willing to give of their time and of their money and their resources. And they do it just to be a giver because they're giving more than they're receiving. They're makers, they're not takers. When you see a great mom or a great dad, they're a giver. When you see a great family member, a child that honors their parents, maybe an aunt or an uncle that is especially nice to their nieces or nephews, those people are givers. When you see a friend or a neighbor that goes out of their way to help someone in the community, those people are givers. As I said before, giving on a social scale is hard to quantify. Can't add up the dollars and cents like you can with monetary capital. But it's just as real and probably even more important. You have to build your social capital if you want to be financially independent, if you want to be happy, if you want to be truly wealthy and independent. Social capital is real and you can see it in people. You can see it in the wake these people make as they go through life, the happiness and the blessings and the goodness that came as a result of their giving. I've been blessed in my life to have wonderful people around me that have always been givers. I can name many of them, but for right now, I'll just think of my maternal grandfather. He was one of the nicest men I ever knew. Now, let me say that. He was the nicest man I ever knew. He was kind. He was friendly. He knew everybody in his community. He lived in a small coal mining community. As a child, I spent a lot of time with him. People used to call me his shadow. Wherever he went, I was always right behind him, just like a shadow. And I can remember, no matter where we went through the community, everybody knew him. Everybody said hi to him. Everybody waved to him. Everybody stopped to talk to him. And he gave his time freely to everyone, whether it was someone of high social status or not. He talked to everybody. He enjoyed everyone's company. He participated in all the local organizations and tried to help and support his community. He worked with the veterans, although he never served. He was a big supporter of veterans organizations and always tried to help disabled veterans. He was there to help the poor. He wasn't a church-going man. He wasn't what you'd call a religious man, but he was very righteous. He had a big heart, and he liked to give. My grandfather was always giving. I remember one year, I don't remember if it was for Christmas or a boy's birthday, but I remember him going to the store and picking out and buying a bicycle for a little boy that came from a disadvantaged family. My grandfather was happy to take the time out of his day to go to the store to pick that bike out, to put it into his car, to deliver it to that boy. My grandfather did that because he was a giver, and because of that, he led a happy and a fulfilled life. And you can do the same thing. If you want to be happy and have a healthy lifestyle, you need to be a giver. You need to be a giver as an entrepreneur or as an employee, and you need to be a giver in your social life. You need to build both monetary capital as well as social capital. Remember, to build wealth in all aspects of your life, you always need to give more than you consume. You need to be a producer. You need to be a maker, not a taker. Whether you want to be a great spouse or a great parent or a great friend or neighbor, it's all about giving. I believe that your ultimate happiness, your true wealth, is more dependent on your social capital than on your monetary capital. But I also believe that by building your social capital, it'll make you more prosperous. You'll find more monetary opportunities come to you. So by building one, you'll actually be building both. You'll receive both social and monetary capital. If you truly want to have wealth, then you have to be a giver, and that's why giving is a part of our 10 wealth-building principles. Well, we've come to the end of another episode. With the next episode, we'll finish our 10-part series. We'll talk about wealth as part of a lifestyle. I appreciate you listening, and as always, if you have comments to help the podcast, or if you have questions that you'd like to hear answered on another episode, you can contact me at wealthsteading.com. I wish you the best of returns. This is John Pugliano.